This is The Guardian.
Bridget Armitt here on Gadigal Land with the full story. Benches might look a little bare today on the opposition side of the chamber.
We can't have this infighting between the two coalition partners. People out in voter land need to know that we've got their back.
That's because with Parliament returning, the coalition rupture will be on full display as both the Liberals and Nationals sit separately.
The other side will allow them to engage in their bizarre behaviour. I note that Married at First Sight begins tonight.
But while the chaos continues for the Conservatives, the spotlight might not be where it needs to shine, on the government and whether it will bring in the reforms Australia desperately needs. Today, political editor Tom McElroy on how the coalition is a distraction from the real story. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of February.
Full Story is supported by Australian Industry Group, Australia's largest and most experienced industry association. From workplace laws to skills shortages and compliance, Australian businesses face challenges every day. Supporting over 60,000 businesses nationwide, Australian Industry Group is Australia's trusted business partner for compliance, advocacy and growth. Members enjoy the benefits of instant HR and legal advice, along with access to a team of experts in workplace relations, compliance, legal, skills development, apprenticeships and more. Whether you're shaping strategy, managing people or driving operations, Australian Industry Group exists to help businesses of all sizes thrive. Learn more and join today at australianindustrygroup.com.au.
Hi Tom, good to see you again.
Bridget, thanks for having me.
Look, before we get into Labor's agenda, Parliament's back today. What are those opposition benches going to look like?
It's going to be fascinating. It's the regularly scheduled first day of Parliament for the year, although we have, of course, had the emergency sittings the week before last. The government's going to be pretty comfortable on the Treasury benches, but on the opposite side, it's going to be an unusual sight. The Liberals and the Nationals are going to be sitting separately. The Liberals are the official opposition. The Nationals will effectively be a minor party on the crossbench, similar to the Greens, and there'll be Teals and other independents as well. So it's quite a realignment. The opposition shadow ministerial portfolios have been reassigned on a temporary basis, and Susan Lee's hoping that if she can convince the Nationals to come back, there'll be Nationals in the front bench again. But today, only Liberals.
When was the last time, historically, the opposition benches were this bare?
Our colleague Josh Butler tells us that it goes back to the Second World War, but it's certainly been decades that the coalition parties have been together formally. There have been various short-term splits at times, but they've usually been a united force in the Parliament. Of course, Labor's majority from the last election is a historic high for the party, and you have to go back a long way to have one party with such dominance in the Parliament. These dynamics all work for Anthony Albanese and all work against the opposition, even before they have their own damaging split.
All right, we'll have to wait and see what those pictures look like out of Parliament later today. I want to talk a little bit more about the coalition before we move on to Labor. Lots of talk about whether Angus Taylor might not challenge Susan Lee. What sense do you have about whether that could happen?
I think it's almost inevitable that he will at some stage. The feeling here is that it probably won't happen this week. The logistics are a little bit difficult. Angus Taylor needs a bit more time to get his ducks in a row in terms of making sure the numbers are with him, and that if he made a move against Susan Lee, there would be no question of it succeeding. The sitting period could be awkward as well. We've got an interest rates decision coming from the Reserve Bank today, and in terms of reorganising the opposition, the feeling broadly was that it would be better for Angus Taylor to strike at the end of a sitting period. And next week is another complication as well. The second week of the sitting fortnight is Senate estimates. The lower house will sit as normal, but senators will be in these long committee hearings and won't be sitting in the chamber. That makes it difficult to schedule a party room meeting next week when all senators and lower house MPs would be present. And Angus Taylor will need everybody there. So I think it's possible that it might be some time before we do see the almost inevitable challenge.
Okay, so Susan Lee, still in leadership for now. David Littleproud survived his leadership challenge last night, and they're talking about reuniting.
Yeah, the Nationals' leadership challenge didn't go ahead. It seems there wasn't support for Colin Boyce, the challenger. He'd acknowledged that going into the meeting. And last night here in Canberra, Susan Lee and David Littleproud and some of their close supporters held talks. There isn't a decision yet for the two coalition parties to come back together, but I think both sides will be pleased that there's progress in that direction. It will require both Susan Lee and David Littleproud to make some concessions and to back down a little bit from some pretty tough words. David Littleproud obviously said that the Nationals wouldn't serve in the coalition under Susan Lee's leadership. It'll be a difficult task walking that back, but I think if cooler heads prevail, it could be advantageous for both parties. There are a number of senators in the National Party who probably won't get re-elected if the two parties don't come back together because they run on a joint ticket. Equally, it's messy for the Liberals. The front bench, as we discussed earlier, is clunky without the Nationals. So I think they'd both quite like some kind of reconciliation if one can be managed in the next little while.
So a reconciliation really important for Nationals and the Liberals. And as much as we enjoy looking at the politics of it, there's this serious knock-on effect too, because if there's no strong opposition to hold the government to account, there's no one really scrutinising what the government's doing.
Yeah, I think the distraction inside the coalition has been challenging for them. I mean, Susan Lee and some of her front benches, people like Ted O'Brien and Tim Wilson have really, and Andrew Bragg, it should be said, have really been pushing for a return to criticism of the government on the question of the economy, and that obviously feeds into the Reserve Bank decision on Tuesday. But all of the questions they're being asked are about leadership and about the structure of the two parties and how things can go forward. So that's very difficult. I think it's opportunity time for Labor in the sense that they can continue to prosecute their policies and their agenda and move forward with governing while they've got pretty limited opposition. But they shouldn't have a false sense of security. They've got their own big set of challenges, and just because there's chaos on the other side of the chamber doesn't mean that there's less pressure on them to deliver. The opportunity might be that they can do some tough things knowing that the coalition is distracted. But as we head towards the next election, I think voters won't reward Labor for cruising, and equally if Anthony Albanese got complacent or cocky on the basis of his strong majority and the disunity on the other side, it would be bad for his prime ministership, I think.
I'm really interested in that. Is there a sign that Labor is going to try and introduce some big, ambitious policy while it can to really deal with the crux of Australia's issues?
The government say that they are interested in taking on these big reforms. A lot of them centre in the economic space, things like the tax system, the structural deficit in the budget, that kind of thing. And Labor, Jim Chalmers, the Treasurer, Anthony Albanese, senior ministers all insist that the government is up for that challenge. But so far we haven't seen a forward-looking agenda in that area. Of course, we're only less than a year from the last election and these things can move slowly. But I think if Labor is going to take economic reform or other big changes to the system to the next election, they'll be doing the work now to formulate those policies. And they'll be looking at the political state of play in the parliament and more broadly and thinking about where they can deploy their political capital, where they can get the most return for ambitious policies. And often in Australian politics, it's those big changes that can have a destabilising effect on the political status quo. You know, no one expected that the first term Rudd government would collapse so completely, that a Prime Minister would be removed so quickly by a challenger within his own party. But it was an attempt to take on big reforms that helped bring Kevin Rudd unstuck. Of course, there was some pretty awful political forces going on. The government was chaotic. The Prime Minister was a difficult person at the top of the government, and his colleagues moved against him. Anyway, my point is that when you bring on these big challenging reform questions, you've got to have done your homework. You've got to try and manage the politics as much as the policy. I think Labor's got an opportunity to do that now. They're never going to have conditions as good as they are at the moment. And if they're true to their word, they think voters will reward them for taking tough decisions on reforms in the economy and in other places as well.
Coming up next, the rise of One Nation. Tom, let's take a look at One Nation. Their numbers are going up in polling, especially with Gen X men. Do you think Labor's a little bit worried about that?
I think Labor will be worried about the fragmentation of the political system that's going on. It's difficult to understand which way the winds are going to blow, where you should put your political stocks when things are unstable in the way they are, or, you know, not following the traditional model of the two big parties and smaller parties orbiting around them. The polling is very good for One Nation at the moment. You know, there was a poll yesterday in the Financial Review that put their primary support at more than 25%. That's quite incredible. It will mean that their support in some rural and regional seats is much higher, and it definitely puts them on track to be competitive in those seats. The only note of caution that I would offer is that the election is some time away and conditions could change. Equally, in the past, One Nation has had challenges scaling up. You know, their due diligence around candidates, party organisational processes, that kind of thing can be difficult. But there's a lot of momentum and hype around One Nation this week, and I think they're looking to capitalise that. That'll be worrying for the coalition, that they risk losing votes to the right. But I don't think Labor will welcome a more forceful presence of One Nation in the political system at all.
Do you think we're going to see more defections? I know Corey Bernardi, a former Liberal senator, has gone and joined a One Nation ticket for South Australia, but do you think on a federal level we'll start to see more defections?
Yeah, my sense is that that's very possible, if not likely. The, you know, pretty bitter politics that is going on within the coalition at the moment suggests that it's possible more people could move. I think One Nation was really boosted by the fact that Barnaby Joyce, the former Nationals leader and Deputy Prime Minister, defected. He's a pretty charismatic character within the Nationals party, and I wouldn't be surprised if more people join him. Of course, One Nation has been hyping the fact that more defections are expected, but so far we haven't seen who those people are. But look, I do think it's possible, especially if they stay very strong in the polls.
I just want to end finally back on Labor's agenda. Parliament's back. There's a lot of work to do. Can you just give us a brief sense of some of those key big issues Labor really needs to start tackling now, separate to all the opposition chaos?
Well, I think the kind of foundational one in both a political and policy sense is this inflation question. Obviously, the numbers haven't been good for Labor in this area in the past little while, and there's real frustration that they're struggling to deal with inflation. That flows onto lots of other areas and kind of undercuts their economic narrative. So I think that's one big, urgent, pressing challenge. Equally, you know, they've got a myriad of complex things on the go. They're trying to reorient the energy system. They're trying to fix the structural deficit in the budget, as we mentioned. They're trying to slow growth in big areas like aged care and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. These are all complex things. And they have other big plans as well. You know, Anthony Albanese wants a system of universal childcare to be his legacy. They'll be running the ruler over how that will work and how much that will cost in this term, potentially offering it to voters at the next election. And look, all kinds of other things like managing the US alliance, managing China, trying to strengthen Australia's position in the Pacific, big complex policy areas like Indigenous affairs, like the threats that exist around democracy and our democratic institutions. It's a difficult time to be in government. They do have some conditions that suit them, as we've said, but you wouldn't envy them in some of these areas. In order to get these things right, it takes a lot of work. It takes some finesse and a bit of luck. And, yeah, as we've been saying, there's chaos all around the parliament at the moment.
And presumably in order to stem any kind of populist move, Labor needs to get some of these big ticket items right.
Yeah, well, I'd offer two there. I mean, inflation, as we say, that economic things are very powerful for voters. The hip pocket nerve, as it's often described, is a real motivator for people, and fair enough. Equally, managing the immigration system and trying to avoid fueling an anti-migration sentiment that sometimes comes from parties on the right, sometimes from other places in the parliament as well. Labor will be concerned about that. You know, we're about to head into a royal commission that's considering social cohesion. And I think along with the anti-Semitism questions and the failures around the Bondi shootings, Labor will be worried that that could give extra impetus for right-wing policies around restrictive migration. So, yeah, it's a tough challenge. This is what they get into government for, though. You know, all sides promise a lot when they run for elections, and when they're in government, it's incumbent on them to deliver. So, look, I don't think they'll be shying away from these challenges, but equally it's difficult to do well on enough of them to offer a convincing case to voters and put the country in a good position.
Tom, I'll let you go to get on with a very big day in Parliament. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Regid. Thanks for having me.
That was political editor Tom McElroy. And keep an eye on the feed tomorrow for Greg Jericho on the Reserve Bank's interest rate decision. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo, and the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Just before we go, for any of you listening on Spotify, there are changes underway on the platform, meaning it might be harder to find us there from now on. So if you want to keep up to date with our latest episodes, hit follow Full Story on Spotify to ensure you don't lose us. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.